2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
Welcome back to another Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. This is your host, Jeff Ponce. Alongside me, as always, is Dylan White, the master of the Robo Scout, who is busy beginning his off-season work, I'm sure, so he can get back to the NFBC pinnacle of the mountain that he was not able to retain this year, but will forever be known as former NFBC champion, Dylan White. What's going on, man? How are you?
Not bad. I actually signed up for a DC that hasn't filled yet. So I am prepping. I've never done anything this early before. I see like people talking on Twitter with about ADPs and stuff, and it's like I see what I think are like gaps or opportunities or discrepancies, and so I'm like, oh, I got to take advantage of this, and I'm sure it will not pay off at all. I'll pick guys who end up getting Tommy John in January, or I'll take a closer, and then they'll sign Kenley Jansen and people like that. Devin Williams will get traded and my closer won't be a closer anymore. But I am excited. I am actually getting amped up by like running my spreadsheets and valuations and stuff and trying to incorporate ADP and find those gaps I like to talk about.
That's fun, man. We got you already cranking, already ready to roll for next year. It's going to be a fun off season as we dive in here. I just got back from the Arizona Fall League.
Yes, indeed.
A little bit more than 24 hours ago. Yeah. So, you know, I saw 11 games over the first 5 days of the league. 6 days of the league. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Yeah, six. 6 days of the week. One of those obviously opening day was a single game. So I only missed three total. Didn't double up on Friday. It was the only day I didn't double up. Other than Monday, but I got in, you know, at about noontime and was at a game at six. So I think I did fine there. But yeah, so I saw a lot of baseball, saw a lot of players out there. I think that the name that's buzzing the most coming out of AFL for me is Zaire Hope. We've talked about Hope on here. I know he's somebody I think we both have been kind of banging the drum on a little bit. Since the beginning of the season, obviously missed some time because of an injury, which is one of the reasons he's, you know, gracing our presence in the AFL this fall. That being said, it's just loud power. There's contact. There's plate approach. He's fast. There's tools. You know, he's a pretty freaky athlete. So, you know, kudos to the Cubs for finding this guy and signing him. And kudos to the Dodgers for insisting on him as I've been told that more or less he was considered the bigger piece or a must-have piece within that deal with Jackson Ferris, which is, you know, pretty significant because Ferris, I think, is a top 100 prospect. Hope should be soon. I'm kind of publicly shaming everyone until he's finally on our top 100. But yeah, I think he checks all the boxes. I think this is very similar to this, like, Roman Anthony, Gunnar Henderson sort of profile, where, you know, there's zone contact, there's good enough swing decisions, there's power. You know, maybe you could say, like, you know, I think less with Hope maybe than the other guys, but like maybe angles, there's going to be some ground balls from time to time, and there's some speed and athleticism, so you're like, this isn't going to atrophy all that quickly. I buy into it. You know, he puts up huge EVs, and that homer that he hit at Goodyear, which is an unusual park. It's where the Guardians play their spring training home games. So it's not a typical AFL park. So it's the first time that I had ever been there. But he hit this bomb and there's a big batter's eye, you know, tall green batter's eye in center field. He hit it over that by like 25 feet. Like it cleared it. You know, it had serious hang time. That was the 470-foot shot. And it was just right up the middle, 110 miles an hour. It was as clean of a barrel as you could have caught, you know, just in terms of like pure backspin, like a four-seam fastball. It just rose and traveled like the most perfect route it could. And that's why it went 470 feet. He just hit the absolute crap out of it. You couldn't have hit a ball better. He's fast, quick, twitchy. He's everything that you kind of want in a fantasy prospect. So I would definitely sort of be banging the drum right now to try to acquire Hope. And if you have him, don't trade him. Don't trade him. Don't trade him. Unless the bounty is significant. I think this is one that could really pop next year as we get, you know, deep into 2025 and he has a chance to perform at a level above low A.
Yeah, I think we're recording Monday. I think Josh Norris caught him, hit an opposite field home run today too.
Yeah, on a breaking ball.
I think it's going to be difficult to trade for him because I think, you know,
yeah.
he's getting all this buzz in the AFL and there's not much like prospect baseball happening at all except for the AFL. So as we saw last year, like Matt Mervis and guys like that, a lot of helium on the performers in the AFL.
Yeah. Other guy that's kind of put on a show a little bit over the, let's say, you know, first week of the AFL, it's Kemp Alderman of the Marlins. And, you know, there's power here and the underlying contact and chase metrics aren't great, but didn't strike out a ton in A-ball this year, for what it's worth. So it could be one of those where it's like just enough approach and contact that, you know, you give him three chances to hit the ball, he's probably going to do it. Huge EVs, that same night in good year, he hit two home runs. It was the fourth home run in 3 days that I had seen. I had one game I didn't see, excuse me. I think it was against Mesa, I didn't see. But he hit three other homers. And like in my presence, that double home run and then one day at Glendale, mammoth shots. I'm at the game at Mesa, which is his next start. He didn't play on Friday. So on Saturday is his next start. He hit another one. Like, it's huge power. He can play a corner a little bit. You know, he's not going to be great out there, but, you know, perhaps good enough. So, yeah, I mean, I kind of don't know where to go with him from a fantasy perspective. Because I think I said it today in the chat, but I think the highest end outcome for him is probably like a Jake Berger type, but he plays in the corner outfield spot, you know, where like batting average is going to fluctuate from year to year, depending upon batted ball luck, just because he doesn't walk a whole lot, but he can hit 30 home runs. Like he has that kind of power. That's not even a question. And the angles are good enough.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I think it was like a 356, 355 ex-Wobicon type of deal. Mm-hmm. And for a guy that hits the ball that hard, obviously there's some angle issues that it's not like 400. but dealt with injury, you know, still played, I think, about 90-something games, but did deal with some injuries. And I don't know how that impacted him. Maybe he's fully healthy. Was a really good college hitter and isn't without pedigree. So he's interesting. You know, I wouldn't go crazy with Kemp Alderman, but I think he will have some helium coming out of this AFL because he's going to have just huge home run numbers.
Yeah, I'm looking at his numbers now. I know out of the draft, he had some of the highest EVs already. A bit of the contact was a question. And I guess last year in his debut, he had a 62% contact. And this year, like you said, in low A, he did pretty well. He had a 70%, which is basically average. So with a 109 90th percentile exit velocity, which is like probably in the top 15, I would think. It's with average contact, it's pretty good. I guess the question is the chase. The chase got a little worse. It was 31% last year. It was 36% this year, which is the average is like 26%. So like 36% is like kind of like Davison De Los Santos territory.
Yeah.
Christian Encarnacion Strand type of thing. So like you can make it work. And with this power, he probably could. Like he's probably above average. Like it all washes out. But I'm a bit scared because it's like which is the real contact? Is
yeah,
62% is at the 70, and he's a bit older. Like he's 21,
yeah,
like for low A, so he's a bit older than like the pitchers. So I could easily see him being a major league bat that hits 30 home runs, and then but I'm kind of scared to pay for it.
Yeah, I agree. I think like there's a time and a place if he's just hanging out there, your league's deep enough, you're in one of those throwback drafts that has maybe like FYPD mixed in, and he's available. Yeah. You know,
he is in mine.
Yeah. So like, you know, let's say there's 400 prospects rostered in that league. Yeah, I think he's worth a flyer at a certain point. Just because of what the power is, it's such an outlier skill. I think you could still gamble on it. And he's not, you know, it's not like it's a Peyton Williams body, who I also saw, who I do think is interesting, but I mean, it's big country ish, you know, like looking like Billy Butler, you know, maybe bigger. He's like 6'5" and like 300 pounds. Like he looks like a lineman. He looks like an offensive lineman in football. kind of talking about him. And he's kind of interesting to an extent as well. I mean, whatever with AFL numbers, I think he hit a homer the other day. But there's contact there and some approach and power. He's not a super hype first baseman, you know, but I think you kind of hit a point with first baseman where it's like, whoever hits the best in them coming up in the minors is going to get opportunities. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just a matter of, is it Vinny Pasquantino or is it Matt Mervis, you know? And that's a legitimate question, but it seems like another, you know, guy from the Blue Jays assembly line of like unassuming prospects who turn out to be the best prospects in their system. So I think he's at least a name of note. And I would say, you know, you get into a league where it's like 500 plus prospects, I think Peyton Williams is more interesting. Like I think anything shallower than that, there's probably more upside-y options, you know, and I would take the upside with like Kemp Alderman. I just think it's a better shot because he can play a position and, you know, but that's not to say that like Williams doesn't follow that trajectory of like the underrated first baseman that are then, you know, good major league hitters for 5 or 6 years or whatever. And have like, you know, contact and some power, because he does have a nice blend of skills and abilities. I don't know if you've looked into Peyton Williams at all.
Yeah. Well, you're talking, I'm looking at it now. His contact is 71%, 90th percentile of 107 basically. And his chase is better than average. So, already kind of ahead of Kemp Alderman there. He's 23, his age 23 season, got to high A. So, it's that's actually pretty interesting. He was never really on my radar. He wasn't in like my top 400.
Yeah.
But, I could see it. I could see taking a flyer for sure. Like yeah. my FYPD is like 10 rounds and
he's a left, at the left. End. And he's left, which is good left for left. First base. Yeah. And I think, you know, overall the numbers at high A, over 77 games, cause he did miss some time as well, were pretty good. And, you know, the Blue Jays were kind of landlocked with their first base situation in AAA, and then Rainer Nunez, who they haven't get completely given up on yet. So that's one of the reasons I think Peyton Williams stayed in high A, especially with missing some time. But, you know, 289, 362, 476, 11 home runs, 22.8% strikeout rate, 10.8% walk rate. So, you know, he balances the power, the approach, and the swing and miss pretty well. Yeah, and it was a 133 WRC plus. So though he was 23, I mean, he did have a pretty good year. Just turned 24, so he is a little bit older. But that's what you're going to get with some of these like more underrated guys that were like senior signs out of college now. That were impacted by COVID. You'll get guys that are just a year old, a year behind sort of in their development. But yeah, I think he's an interesting, and he's certainly like a first base only type. So like I said, you have to take some of it with like a grain of salt. Why don't we take a quick break here, Dylan? And then when we come back, we're going to talk about a pitcher that really impressed me.
Let's do it.
You sit in traffic now, but later there's an ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste, because you know all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
All right, and we're back. I promised a pitcher that impressed me. Kind of a tongue twister, felt that way as I was saying it. But Connor Phillips. I thought Connor Phillips looked incredible. Like, as good as I've ever seen Connor Phillips look. it was a weird season for Phillips. And I think when you dig into the season, it'll be interesting. Like if things keep trending in a good direction, he's able to kind of speak with some clarity, like post-mortem about what sort of took place in terms of his mechanic switches and those sort of things. He really struggled. I mean, I think he made 19 appearances or something like that prior to getting shut down in June, late June, missed like 2 months of the season, assigned to the Arizona Complex League. He didn't pitch out there, which is simply a roster functionality, or whatever you want to say, or technicality, that I think just sort of allowed them to shut him down and just kind of work from the ground up. Because he had given up, I think he had more earned runs than innings. It was like a 10 ERA over like a 50 something inning sample. So it wasn't short or small. Then he came back at the end of the season and over his final seven appearances had like a sub 3 ERA and like pitched pretty well. Out in AFL, he threw 4 innings. He was probably the most impressive performance that I saw over the 11 games that I saw of AFL. Went 4 innings, scoreless. Didn't walk anybody, right? Which is like, okay. Struck out 7 batters. He only faced 14 in that outing. Just to put things into perspective, right? Didn't allow a lot of hard contact. He sat 98, 99 to 100 in the first inning. And I mean, throws that with like 17, 18 inches of ride, right? Like it's nasty. And then it has a hard slider, a hard sweeper that has some horizontal movement and some power. It's a really nasty 1-2 punch. You kind of mix in a couple of other looks. It looked like, okay, if this all clicks, this could be Cole Reagans, like right-handed guy, Reagans obviously a lefty, but like the guy who we had major questions about and we're like wrote him off as a reliever and then fixes something and is able to like throw smoke as a starter with a nasty breaking ball. I wouldn't be all the way back in. I think he's an early season, like underrated name for a variety of formats, redraft and dynasty, because I think the price tag is going to be cheap. And I do think there's opportunity there in Cincinnati, especially if he's as good as he's looked over like his last 8 appearances. We'll see how he looks this week. But that's a tough environment to pitch in, number one. You're facing really good lineups, really talented lineups, the type of lineups you don't see in the minor leagues, frankly. Where maybe not 1 through 9, but like 1 through 6 typically are like all good prospects that are going to be big leaguers, And sometimes you face a team like Glendale. He's on Glendale, so you won't face him, but that actually has multiple big leaguers in their lineup. whether it be Matt McClain or Christian Encarnacion Strand, the league has transitioned in that sense. It seems like guys that miss time, even as MLB players, are maybe getting a sign there, younger players at least. So that's interesting, right? Like, I just think from the standpoint of like, it's not an easy place to perform. And Phillips seems kind of battle tested. And I understand he's pitched in AAA and he's got experience and he was good in AAA at the end of the year. So we should, he's pitched in the major leagues. So we should, figure this would continue. I don't know. I think that Phillips is sort of back on the radar for me for next year, simply because of the quality of the stuff. And if he's executing and getting out, then I'm sort of in,
Yeah. Connor Phillips after his 2023, I was in on him big time. Like I was kind of saying, it's not the Southern League ball. And I kind of believed in him as like a top 100 prospect, picked him up in all my leagues, my dynasties. I even had him before 2024 because he pitched at the back end of 2023 in the majors. I had him in my DCs because he's already got major league experience. Even if he's not like pitching in Cincinnati, if it's tough ERA or whatever, at least he'll get strikeouts. So if I ever need strikeouts, I can plug him in. I was very excited about Connor Phillips, and then he was so bad Like I dropped him in my dynasty leagues. I'm so cutthroat that like, just even though all those things I said, and it's only one season and there's probably a reason for it, I just cut him because I just like, I like churning and I like, speculating on the next big thing. So I've dropped him everywhere, but then after that performance at the AFL and hear what you're saying, I have him firmly on my DC radar for the exact reasons I said before. So if he's sitting 98, and it's like he's not walking anybody and he's striking up 50%, like I think that's a very good sign that he's fixed something. So yeah, he's definitely someone I'm going to be picking in like the last five rounds of a DC.
Yeah, I think it's worth to jump back in while the price is pretty cheap, because I don't think as many people will be bought in on the off season. And it's easy to point to some warts in the last year and just say, no, I don't want that guy. So I just think, while the price is cheap, it's a wise decision to maybe take a flyer on a guy who might have figured something out after kind of, ending up in the wilderness. That happens. Pitching is tough. Somebody who was in the wilderness earlier in the season and then a midseason trade kind of changed his fortunes. Theron Lorenzo, who was acquired in the Jack Flaherty trade from the Tigers. To the Tigers from the Dodgers. Looked great. Had one game where in Scottsdale, from both sides of the plate, he showed off his power. He had a double as a right-hander, had a double and a home run as a lefty. He's a switch-hitting, power-hitting catcher. The receiving back there isn't great. He is better than Josue Briseño, who we'll probably talk about later on in this program. and there wasn't as much swing and miss as like I kind of anticipated there would be. But power bat, knows how to elevate, hits the heck out of the ball, big body switch hitter. Whether he ends up a catcher or spending some time at first base or DH, this is a masher. This is like a legitimate power bat. I'm pretty in on Lorenzo after seeing him myself.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. I love Lorenzo. He same age as Xavier Isaac and same 90th percentile exit velocity. And Isaac's a masher, except the contact rate is 11% better than Isaac. And Lorenzo chases like 6% less and barrels just as much. So if you like Isaac, you should like Lorenzo. They both may end up first base. So it's kind of a good kind of comp, same age, same level.
Yeah.
I love Lorenzo. I liked him when he was on the Dodgers. Again, I dropped him too because it's a one catcher league and I don't want to have too many catchers because I like a lot of catchers in the minors. Definitely. I'm definitely on board.
No, I agree with that 100%. All right. I think Lorenzo is interesting. I think Josue Briseño is interesting. And they're kind of funny because it's like the Tigers have these two catchers where you're kind of questioning like bigger body, like how much are these guys going to catch? How good are they going to be back there? I don't think Briseño is probably going to catch at all. I think that's I think he's going to be primarily a first baseman. It could start as soon as next year. That being said, he's got a great combination of contact and approach. And the power's there. He doesn't sell out for it. But when it's there to be taken, he can adjust. And every time he makes contact, he finds a barrel and hits the ball hard, right? So it could be just stinging line drives. It could be three homers like he hit the other day. Mm-hmm. But it's like he has an opportunity to do stuff like that because he just finds barrels and he hits the ball hard. It's that combination of power and contact. And not, even if he does chase a little bit, like one of those home runs, I think it was actually slightly out of the zone and he kind of like went out and got it. But three home runs in a single game. It was like every time I was at Scottsdale, there was a Tigers catching prospect. one day it was Lorenzo, the next day that it was Briseño. So I think he's really interesting. I just think it's another first base profile. And so that kind of adds some questions to like, all right, like how much is he going to hit? Does he clear that bar? Because there's not many of those jobs. There's 30 first basemen, right? And not everyone that hits the best is in every organization. So It's just a tough position to clear the bar on if you don't have, because you don't have defensive value and versatility and the ability to maybe play multiple infield spots or multiple outfield spots. Like, I think that's often what the question is when we talk about the first base profile being a little bit risky. But that being said, Briseño does have the combination of skills that you need to be successful. And I think he should be owned in even shallower leagues, like 200 prospects. I think I'd have Briseño in there pretty easily.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think both of us had him as a breakout for this year at the catcher position just because the data was so good. And then I guess he was injured, like a knee injury maybe, missed a lot of time. And like his data actually, with the exception of his barrel rate, which went down, like he actually improved across the board. He had better contact, actually better 90th and less chase. So he actually did kind of better on those metrics. But yeah, I think him and Lorenzo, maybe they do have to fight for first, because I like Dylan Dingler as well on the Tigers. He didn't have the greatest debut in the majors this year, but he did really well in AAA, and he's got good data as well, pretty solid data as well. So Tigers have nice options at the quote-unquote catcher position, catcher slash first base position.
There's also so many hitters that I could talk about on this podcast. You know, Bryce Eldridge didn't have a great week for me. You know, struggled a little bit, particularly against Andrew Painter. I could talk about Painter, of course, but I think I kind of wrote my thoughts. It's all out there. You got the full video. I tweeted about it. There's plenty of content to get me on Andy Painter. I don't think I need to go into some tangent about who he is or what he's doing. It's just good that he's back and the velocity's there. Xavier Isaacs looked okay for me. But I just think you got to believe in the power. There's just, it's hard to doubt that level of impact, even if the contact skills and some of that stuff is a little shaky. I think you just got to trust that it gets there with the athlete and just the raw abilities and power that he has. It's so outlier. You got to bet in the outliers. But the guy I want to talk about is Trey Morgan. I found Trey Morgan to be one of the more intriguing hitters that I saw while I was in the AFL. I really liked the swing. You know, it looked like he was trying to elevate the ball a little bit more, and it was successful. I think the angles are good. Maybe the balls weren't clear in the fence, but he hit a couple of doubles. Like in the opening night, he hit a double that was just like cranked, you know. Good contact skills. He's fast. He's an interesting offensive player. Probably should just play first base, though. He is terrible in the outfield. They had him in left field, and he was losing balls in like night games. Like in a day game, that's going to happen in Arizona simply because the skies are like sun's bright and the skies are huge. It's just a weird place to catch a baseball. I think you see a lot of errors out there. But night games, like, come on, man. There's no excuse on that. You don't have to fall on the lights. Give me a break. But it was like multiple bad routes. But he's a great defensive first baseman, and I think the bat's going to clear. I think there's enough power there. It might be more like 18 to 22 homers a year, but there's batting average. There's some speed. There's some approach. I think that Morgan is pretty legit. He's an exciting player and like fun to watch. And I think like a guy that could stumble into a peak year at some point at like 27, 28 years old in the majors where he puts up a huge fantasy season. I don't think he'll do it consistently, but it'll be like that one, you know, everything breaks right, 90th percentile sort of outcome or, you know, whatever. I think he's got some of those abilities. He's exciting. You know, he hits enough that there's no questions, even if it's not a ton of power, he's going to hit for average, etc.
Yeah. No, he on these like stat line projection, like even Steamer, they love his bat. One of the highest WRC plus projections out there. Like you said, great contact, doesn't chase much, barrels it up. It's like the power, the thump isn't there necessarily, but he's only 21. He's in double A already as well. So he's sort of like on the cusp of the majors. He is someone I was trying to look at who are options for redraft for my DC. And, you know, Trey Morgan's actually pretty intriguing because he may, you know, may pop up at the end of the year. It's the Rays, so maybe not, but, you know, at least in September, maybe he will. So maybe you could add some batting average there. But yeah, Trey Morgan, that's really interesting.
Yeah, for sure. Why don't we switch gears here? That way we have some more AFL. There's plenty of AFL guys, plenty more guys that we could talk about. We're going to put a pin in it. And why don't we chat a little bit about your article that's coming out today, some underrated pitching prospects that RoboScout likes. First one that you brought up, we'll maybe talk about two from the article. But the first one we brought up that in the article, and the first one I want to talk to you about is Casey Hunt. So talk to me a little bit about Hunt, because it was an interesting story, interesting breakout this year. You know, guy that had been almost exclusively a reliever in college and was drafted, didn't sign, went back to school, then signs as a non-drafted free agent. And kind of looks like another win for Brewers pitching development of taking a guy with some relief questions and turning him into a legitimate starting pitching candidate. So talking about Hunt, because I think this guy could be an impact next year. He could be in Milwaukee. It wouldn't shock me.
Yeah, I took, so like I did with the hitters last week, I kind of took guys and looked at Statcast clusters that are kind of similar. So I kind of did the same thing here, where I went down kind of my RoboScout list, saw someone who, like, as you're going down the list, you know, you got like Alejandro Rosario, Yarlin Susana, like all these guys that you definitely know are highly regarded. Then you hit like Casey Hunt, and then it's like, whoa, okay, he's not well regarded. So the thrust of the article is underrated pitchers, basically who performed, who has stuff plus, who gets whiffs on their pitch mix, and for whatever reasons are not really well regarded in sort of in the industry, both, you know, real life or fantasy. So Casey Hunt popped up, and so I found him before when I did the pitch mix article. He had five pitches that each kind of graded as better than average when I compared to the average whiff rate, chase rate, CSW for that pitch at that level. Like, he was kind of exceeding the average, and he had five pitches that were average or better. So he kind of popped as like one of the better pitch mixes of the year. And then when you kind of look at his data in Double A, when you look down the RoboScout, he's like very comparable in terms of results to Bubba Chandler. Of course, Bubba Chandler is a better prospect. He's, you know, 2 years younger and, you know, has massive stuff, sits 97 with his fastball, etc. But like, if you compare across the board, the strikeout rate, the walk rate, whip, ground ball rate, like, it's all right up there with Bubba Chandler. And if you then project out that performance with major league equivalencies, it's actually one of the better peak projections of anyone who has not debuted in the majors yet. I remember I ran it, and it was like Kumar Rocker before he debuted was the number one, had the highest like peak projection of a pitcher who hadn't debuted. And then number two is Casey Hunt. So that was pretty interesting. So, you know, I'm hitting Casey Hunt on all angles. I have him as someone with traits to target, have him as super underrated. And if you're in redraft, he's someone who should probably be on your radar, because he's in AAA now. Or maybe he's not, but he's definitely Double A or Triple A, right on the cusp of the majors. Milwaukee's doing great things with their pitching development. And, you know, his whip, his ratios and all that should be good. So.
Yeah, and it was Double A. He made six starts in Double A.
Okay, Double A. So 23 years old, Double A. Yeah, he's someone that I would target. I tried to get him in my dynasty leagues actually at the end of the year for all these reasons I'm talking about. I actually didn't get him. I got kind of beat out on I didn't really have that much money left. And he started getting buzz at the end. So Casey Hunt is someone that I think is underrated in both redraft and dynasty.
So here, next guy I want to ask you about is Ben Shields from the Yankees, 25-year-old. Put up pretty good numbers across what high-end Double A this year. So talk to me about Shields and what you like about him.
Yeah, same idea. He popped up on that same article where I looked at the pitch types and how they performed against average. He was kind of... He's in RoboScout on the rankings in the top 25s, but he's kind of at the bottom end of the 25. And the reason for that is because he's 25 years old. So he's kind of, his major league equivalency now is kind of what his peak's going to be, because he's almost 27. But his numbers too are surprising. So he's on the cusp of the major leagues in Double A. He has a very good peak projection as well. I compared him in the article to Chase Dolander. Again, obviously, Chase Dolander is a better prospect, 3 years younger, much better stuff, et cetera, but it's the whole point of the article showing that, you know, Ben Shields' performance, at least on the surface, was as good, if not better. And he also has underlying that supports that. It's not like he throws 70 and is getting lucky from BABIP, et cetera. And he's got a good projection too. So he's someone I'm also targeting with Casey Hunt. So I'm kind of giving away the game here by Casey Hunt and Ben Shields, my top two here underrated pitching prospects. But again, I would target him in Dynasty. I picked him up. He's one I did get for free at the end of the year. And I think it's exactly a strategy I talk about a lot, where at the end of a season, you kind of look for the AA, AAA guys who may debut, because what will happen is as the redraft ADP comes in for NFBC, these guys start getting pushed up and pushed up, like Matt Mervis last year. And so they become, right around FYPD time, spring training time, they become very highly coveted dynasty assets. So if you pick them up cheap, I basically picked up Ben Shields for free. Hopefully by spring training, he's like kind of in the mix of possibly making the team or being talked about as being an early call up. And, you know, you can kind of take advantage of that, because, as you know, dynasty leagues is a lot of like buy low, sell high, and try to get value and return on investment. So Ben Shields and Casey Hunt are two of those guys.
Yeah. And not a particularly hard thrower, but he's also a lefty with a weird horizontal approach angle on the fastball, which I think allows it to play up. Despite not being like surface numbers great. And it's not a huge bat misser for him, but it's an effective pitch and sets up. He's got a pair of different breaking balls here and a sweeper slider in the low 80s, and then like a two plane curveball that kind of moves just as much horizontally, but with depth that plays off the slider. So it's kind of a couple of interesting looks. So yeah, I think he's definitely like a really interesting underrated target call out. Good one by you, Dylan. We're going to put a pin in it there, so that way you can go and read the rest of the article and see all the other underrated pitching prospect names that are in the article. Until next time, Dylan, we're going to tune out. It's been the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. Thanks for tuning in.
Cheers. Nice.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.